Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. A war of words and a stalemate in Washington, D.C. this week. The White House has declared that it will not cooperate with the impeachment inquiry. President Trump tweeted that the Democratic-led House inquiry was, quote, a totally compromised kangaroo court, end quote. Democrats say that's obstruction and vow to press on. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi put it this way, Mr. President, you are not above the law. You will be held accountable. So what happens now? We called Noah Feldman. He's a law professor at Harvard University. He specializes in constitutional studies, and he wrote an op-ed in the New York Times this week arguing that we are in a constitutional crisis. Professor Feldman started by explaining what this process is supposed to look like.
The House of Representatives is supposed to engage in the process of deciding whether the president or any other federal official should be impeached. And impeachment is sort of like an indictment by a grand jury. It's not a full trial, but it involves gathering all of the evidence, presenting it, and saying, we think there's enough reason for a trial. That's the House of Representatives.
Okay.
Then the trial is supposed to take place in the Senate. And that's the sort of thing where there's a prosecution team, which usually comes from the House of Representatives. They actually go over to the Senate chamber. They appear. And typically, the president is entitled to defend himself. So there is a right to hear the charges against the president and for the president to offer a defense. And then the Senate is the jury, and they vote ultimately on whether to remove the president or not. That's how it's laid out in the Constitution.
So the defendant then doesn't really get engaged in defending until the portion in the Senate. And right now we're in the portion in the House of Representatives, which is much more like fact-finding for a grand jury. Am I feeding that back to you correctly?
You are absolutely saying that correctly. And that's also why subpoenas are issued. The House of Representatives is looking for feedback and information from people in the White House and elsewhere in the executive branch in order to gather evidence to decide whether to charge the president.
Okay, so let's pick up on your op-ed now from there. In it, you say that there are two conditions that are necessary for a constitutional crisis. What are those?
The first requirement is that we're in a situation where the Constitution doesn't tell us exactly what to do next. And we're in that situation here because the Constitution says that the House should be able to investigate as part of an impeachment inquiry. But when the president says, I reject that, and the president almost literally said, I'm not unconstitutional, you're unconstitutional, then nothing in the Constitution tells us what should resolve that conflict.
What about the second condition?
The second condition is that each side in the crisis conflict is refusing to back down. So what you need is a situation which we have now, or the House of Representatives is saying, we're demanding that you hand over this material, and the president is saying, I'm not handing it over. And when neither is going to blink, that's when you have a crisis.
Okay, so you said in your op-ed that Watergate met these two conditions. Ultimately, President Nixon resigned, short of impeachment, but did somebody blink in Watergate, and if so, who?
Yes, the president blinked. What happened in the Watergate situation is that the special prosecutor had gone to a federal court to ask for the Watergate tapes to be produced in a subpoena. And the court had said to the president, you have to hand them over. And the president said no. So that was a standoff, and no one knew what was going to happen next. The Supreme Court then ruled that the president had to turn over the tapes. And Nixon did turn over most of the tapes. There's a famous 18-and-a-half-minute gap on one of the tapes, so he didn't exactly hand over everything. But he did hand them over, and at that point, it was clear he was going to be impeached, and the president blinked and Nixon resigned.
And the case that the Supreme Court heard wasn't about whether they could impeach or not impeach. It was about whether or not Nixon had to respond to a subpoena. Is that correct?
Exactly. And by the way, Nixon's claim that he didn't have to respond was nowhere near as extreme as the claims that Donald Trump has been making in court and elsewhere, where he's saying, I don't have to answer anything. All that Nixon said was that certain particular information that he was being asked for, confidential conversations in the White House, should be protected by what's called executive privilege, which is an idea that the courts recognize, which is that there are some communications between the president and his closest advisors that should remain secret from the general world so the president can do his job well. And the Supreme Court ruled under those particular circumstances that Nixon's claims of privilege were overcome by the need of the criminal justice system for the evidence that was available in those tapes, evidence of a criminal cover-up.
So, Noah, I think there are a lot of people who are assuming that ultimately this will go to the Supreme Court on this question of whether or not President Trump responds to the subpoenas. Given that the Supreme Court has already answered this in a similar situation, is it possible that the court would say, we've already ruled on this and we're not going to consider it again in this case?
If the Supreme Court thought the case was exactly analogous to the Nixon case, then they would say to Trump, you have to participate, you have to go along. And that might be what they do. On the other hand, it's also conceivable that they could say that there is a difference, not a huge difference, but there is a difference between this and the Watergate tape situation. And that is that there, it was actually a court that was demanding that the president hand the material over. Here, it's Congress who's demanding that the material be handed over. So in other words, the other time it was a struggle between the executive branch, the president, and the judicial branch. Here it's a struggle between the executive branch and the legislative branch. And it's conceivable, I don't think it's likely, but it's conceivable that the Supreme Court might say, you know what, our name is Paul, this is between y'all. We have no role to play in this interbranch dispute. And if they said that, then that would effectively mean giving a win to the president.
Okay. Now, we've been comparing and contrasting between Watergate and the current situation. Is there anything substantially different in the Clinton impeachment proceedings that's important or informative in this moment?
Clinton ultimately cooperated in the impeachment process. He allowed himself to be interviewed under oath by the special prosecutor, and he lied. And that ultimately led to his being impeached. Donald Trump's takeaway lesson from that very clearly, we saw this during the Mueller investigation, was I'm not going to agree to testify under oath. And I think it may well be that he's similarly looking at what happened to Bill Clinton, and Trump seems to be saying, I'm not going to follow what Clinton's playbook was. I'm just going to refuse to participate at all.
Okay, so President Trump, as you know, has been arguing that this impeachment process is unconstitutional. He said, I'm not unconstitutional, you're unconstitutional. Is there any circumstance under which there is traction for that argument, that the House, as it is doing it, is pursuing an unconstitutional impeachment?
Honestly, I've racked my brains because I try to teach my students, and as part of my job as a constitutional law professor, consider the best arguments on the side that doesn't seem right to you. And I honestly cannot think of one. It is within the constitutional power of the House to impeach. It is therefore within their power to investigate impeachment. It's part of their job to oversee the president. So I cannot come up with any theory that supports in any way Trump's idea that it's somehow unconstitutional for the House to investigate him. You know, he's saying that in the past, the House has only engaged in an impeachment inquiry after first passing a resolution. But there's nothing in the Constitution that says how the House has to go about doing things. There's nothing in the Constitution that says the House has to act by a resolution. So I really think Trump's view is, it's really empty. Yeah.
But to clarify, the House has, in fact, not voted on that resolution. Do they now need to do that?
Under the Constitution, there is no requirement for them to do so. My own personal view is that it would be a good idea if they did do that, just to clarify to the world that there's no excuse whatsoever that can be made on the other side.
Okay, now, no, there is so much noise happening in this process. I have to believe that sort of for the average person, it would be really tempting right now to just check out or wait it out and see what happens. Why shouldn't they? Will this ever really impact everyday lives of everyday people?
Every day, we knowingly or not benefit from the fact that we live in a constitutional republic. And that depends on certain things being true, namely that our senior elected officials actually follow the blueprint that's in the Constitution. When that begins to break down, whether it affects you today or tomorrow, it's going to affect you actively in the very near future. And that's really the true reason we should be paying attention.
That's Noah Feldman, a law professor at Harvard University. His op-ed in the New York Times is titled, This is a Constitutional Crisis. What Happens Next? We'll have a link to it at our website, radioboston.org. Now, to further aid us in our quest to understand just exactly what is going on, WBUR legal analyst Nancy Gertner joins us in Studio 3. She's also a retired federal judge and a senior lecturer at Harvard Law School. Judge Gertner, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
So let me just start by asking if you agree with Noah Feldman's assessment of the situation.
Well, he said a number of things. I mean, first, the notion that the Nixon tape case was slightly different because the Nixon tapes were in connection with the criminal prosecution of the Watergate burglars. And so a judge said, turn over tapes that are related to their conversations with you, Mr. President. And so this was an enforcement of a judicial subpoena. I think it's a distinction without a difference, as they say. I don't think it matters. These are subpoenas, lawful subpoenas by a co-equal branch. I don't think that the Supreme Court would make a distinction. If what comes to the court is, should these subpoenas be followed through on? Should they be complied with? If that's the issue that comes to the court, then I don't think there's a meaningful distinction between the Nixon case and this.
So one of the things Feldman said is we can't stay at a stalemate. That's why we're in a constitutional crisis. We have a stalemate.
Right.
If nobody's going to back down, somebody's going to have to do something about this. One opportunity is in the third branch, is in the government. I mean, the courts. Is anything going to go to the Supreme Court on this?
Well, the question about the enforcement of subpoenas is now already in the courts in various ways. There's the enforcement of the subpoena to get Trump's tax returns. Now the next step with respect to the Ukraine crisis will be enforcement of document subpoenas by Congress concerning the Ukraine controversy. It goes before court. The court's going to have essentially one question and one question only. Was this a document, this subpoena, duly authorized by a body that is allowed to that is in a position to make that kind of order? And the answer is clearly yes. There may be questions about the timing of the subpoena. There may be questions about did it go to the right person? You know, is it asking for too much? How burdensome? But the question of whether or not it ought to be enforced is a very simple and very narrow question. The legitimacy of the proceedings, his broader issue, saying I'm not going to follow this subpoena,
President Trump,
because I don't think it's a legitimate enterprise, is like saying I subpoena you to come to the Suffolk Superior Court. Your answer is I don't recognize the Suffolk Superior Court. This is not an answer.
Is that really the appropriate parallel, like what Nora Feldman said? No, you're unconstitutional.
That's right. Well, then he's denying the legitimacy of the proceeding. And it is a proceeding which is in the Constitution. You know, a lot of times the Constitution didn't say very much, but the Constitution says Congress shall make its own rules, full stop. That means the rules of impeachment are the rules that Congress shall make. It also says that Congress has the sole power of impeachment. The Senate, as Noah described, has the power for a trial, and it actually describes what a trial would look like in the Senate. So the president can't say, House impeachment process, I don't accept it. That's in the Constitution.
All right. So that obstruction of justice has come up a lot in the last 48 hours, including significantly, Twitter has gifted us with a video of Lindsey Graham arguing that past ignoring of subpoenas as an impeachment in an impeachment process was essentially obstruction of justice. Here he is. It's 1998.
The day Richard Nixon failed to answer that subpoena is the day that he was subject to impeachment because he took the power from Congress over the impeachment process away from Congress, and he became the judge and jury.
So as you were talking, I kept thinking of that old Brady Bunch line, Marcia, Marcia, Marcia. But instead, subpoena, subpoena, subpoena,
right,
subpoena.
Right.
It feels like this is all about that. In refusing to cooperate with a subpoena, is there obstruction of justice going on here that essentially automatically triggers justification for impeachment?
Sure. I mean, it is denying the legitimacy of a co-equal branch whose power derives from the Constitution. You can't get much more impeachable than that. You just can't get any much more impeachable than that. It's one thing. It's very different with the Mueller investigation, for example. The president would say executive privilege, and things were a little squishy on that. He would say, the timing of these subpoenas. I'm not yet ready. I haven't consulted my counsel. There are subpoena directed defenses, not a the entire proceeding is illegitimate defense.
Peter Baker argued in the New York Times that the president actually isn't legally arguing that. What he's doing is signaling to his base politically that this is an illegitimate process. What do you make of that argument?
Well, I think that that's right. I think that this is, you know, this is a question of saying whatever comes out of this process, it is not legitimate. And if the base winds up being so clearly in his favor, that would affect the Senate trial. It is a political process. So he's looking over the heads of the institutions in front of him and saying, you know, this is an illegitimate process. I agree with Noah Feldman, by the way. That is fundamentally a constitutional crisis, because that's saying, telling the base, don't respect what the Constitution is saying.
So, to that point of respecting what the Constitution is saying, that clip was Lindsey Graham, who clearly is not making that same argument in the case of this impeachment inquiry. Are there any legal grounds to say that what he said about Nixon doesn't apply here to Trump?
There's no what he said, unfortunately, what Lindsey Graham said doesn't bind anybody. It just shows what a hypocrite he is. But what he has said is clearly what U.S. v. Nixon said, which is that the president was obliged to turn over those tapes. And one of the articles of impeachment for Nixon was an obstruction of justice article of impeachment. But again, so this is within the sort of bucket of obstruction issues that the president could do that take him within the ambit of an impeachment inquiry. There's no question that it can. The question of whether or not it rises to the level of articles of impeachment, that's for the House to decide, and it seems likely that they will. And whether or not he should be convicted of it is for the Senate to decide.
Okay, I want to get through two more questions. First, this whole thing started over the phone call to Ukraine. The president of Ukraine gave a long press conference today where he basically said, "I wasn't pressured." Does that matter at this point in this process?
I don't think it matters. Before I came on the air, I looked at the text messages in this case. He can say he wasn't pressured, but he's not a credible spokesperson because, after all, he's still vulnerable to the same pressure that was involved in this case to begin with. The text messages between Volker and Sondland,
members of the State Department,
that's right, and Taylor could not be clearer. Could not be clearer. So while these subpoenas are important, the Congress may well have enough to impeach right now.
All right. So let's shift gears just a little bit to Rudy Giuliani for a last question. Two of his associates are under arrest now. They were believed to be important witnesses in the House's impeachment inquiry of Mr. Trump. They were under arrest for essentially campaign finance violations involving getting Ukraine to investigate the Bidens. What are the implications of them being arrested, and is Rudy Giuliani in trouble?
I don't think there are any implications of their being arrested unless they would, as they say, testify against him. In other words, if as a way of getting out from under these indictments, they do what Michael Cohen did. Trump's personal lawyer saying that essentially, if I'm in trouble, I'm going to tell you about the person who put me in this position. So that's possible. Giuliani's also in a pickle, it seems to me. That's a legal term, a pickle. and it goes like this. If he testifies before the Senate, as Lindsey Graham is proposing, and testifies with respect to issues that he then wants to claim are attorney-client privileged in the House, he has waived the privilege. He has completely waived the privilege. So I think he could be in trouble.
All right. That is WBUR legal analyst Nancy Gertner, who is a retired federal judge and a senior lecturer at Harvard Law School. Thanks for helping us out with this.
Thank you.
All right. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Dearing. This is Radio Boston.